I've heard many contrarians bemoan the custom of the year-end review, reminding us that January 1st is an arbitrary dividing line, and that history is a continuum that only textbook authors can partition into chapters. But I, for one, love it. I pick up all the best of whatever the year issues on the newsstands, I make New Year's resolutions, and I page through all of the Year in Pictures websites. It may be arbitrary, but December 31st is still a marker. It's a milepost in our lives that can sometimes feel like an unending newsreel. Milestones give us a resting place, an excuse to take a breath and ask, how am I doing? How are we, human beings and residents of Earth, doing?
In Japan, I've always lived in Tokyo, but I've never felt such quake in my life.
Yemen is witnessing a new era.
And I stand with Occupy Wall Street.
Joe Paterno is no longer the head football coach.
Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
2011, by any measure, will go down as an amazing year. Moments to be remembered, of course. But news from around the world worthy of that much overused word, historic. But those things, like the tsunami in Japan or the phone hacking scandal, hi, this is Celeste Headlee, please leave a message after the beep, are not my favorite things. Neither are the things I really want to forget, like the image of the cop casually pepper spraying protesters at UC Davis or Rebecca Black becoming famous for being awful. No, my favorite things are the unexpected headlines, stuff that came out of left field. The discovery of Kepler 22b, the Christmas planet. The year began with the discovery of a planet outside our solar system that was much too hot to support life. But Kepler 22b is in the Goldilocks zone, just the right temperature, and only 600 short light years away.
It's close enough to Earth size so that you can imagine life as we know it being on it.
Two more planets discovered a couple weeks later sends my mind spinning toward all the possibilities for further discovery in the universe. And then there were the horrible photos of the hockey riots in Vancouver, playing into the stereotypes about Canadians and their love for ice hockey, but going against the common idea that Canadians are too nice to ever get really angry. And the sad execution of Troy Davis in Georgia. He was one of thousands on death row, but his stubborn insistence on his innocence sparked a national debate about capital punishment. And then there were the sillier stories, like Harold Camping. He predicted the apocalypse in October. It's true that much of the world stopped, if only to stare and laugh. Camping now says no one can know the exact date of the rapture. And perhaps my favorite, totally unexpected story of the year? Abercrombie and Fitch offering to pay the situation to stop wearing their clothes. No idea who the situation is?
You know, I know exactly what happened in that fight. I actually knocked myself out before the fight even happened. And then I fought him after that. So, I mean...
Lucky you. Suffice it to say, I wouldn't want him wearing my clothes either. Beyond the happy surprises, though, I also love the stories that tell us a little more about who we are as people. The Arab Spring will be written about a great deal and may end up trumping the economy as 2011's most significant story.
The system here in Egypt and in so many other countries was so rotten and going so nowhere that something had to happen, but none of us really knew what or when would happen.
But better minds than mine can talk about the historic impacts of a Tunisian fruit vendor in Tahrir Square. That's best left perhaps to reporters like the BBC's John Lyne. Instead, I look back and wonder, what do we become when we're pushed to extremity, like the people of Joplin, Missouri?
We are a family. Family is who takes care of you, who looks out for you, and this community has come together as a family. Look what we can accomplish. Look what can be done.
Or the miraculous recovery of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. I teared up when I saw her walk onto the floor of Congress in August, a big smile on her face and on mine.
Congresswoman Gabby Giffords brings us...
And 2011 held other triumphs as well, like Ralph Steinman's Nobel Prize. The Canadian biologist was using his research in immune therapies to treat himself, but his health deteriorated in the fall. Days before the Nobel Prize announcements were due, Steinman's daughter says he joked, "I know I've got to hold out for that. They don't give it to you if you've passed away." But he didn't hold out. And after much debate, the Nobel Committee decided to award its first and only posthumous prize. Meeting his daughter Alexis will live long in my memory this year.
When he actually passed away on Friday, the family was just in complete and utter shock. And, you know, I know for myself, I kept expecting him to walk through the door.
So here we are. It's the second to last day of the year, and it's my birthday. I can't tell you how relieved I am not to be in Samoa this year, where I wouldn't get a birthday. But this is as good a time as any to take a breath and ask, how am I doing? How are we doing? And despite all of the alarming headlines and the depressing surveys, I look back and I think, we're doing all right. And we're going to be all right. Happy New Year. And as a birthday gift to me, I have one of my favorite guests in here with us today, Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. I wonder what you look back and what do you think will be remembered about 2011? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a very much a transitional year in a lot of ways. But one thing I was struck by as I was listening to your essay is having been in Vermont during Irene, you played the piece about Joplin, Missouri. I could say the same thing about Vermont and what Vermonters went through
during Hurricane Irene.
During the hurricane, it was extraordinary that it was unexpected. Of course, it was a tropical storm there, not a hurricane, but devastating to an entire state that was completely not expecting this. And the way Vermonters pulled together, I think, is symbolic of the way a lot of Americans feel about Heartland America still being able to pull together. So I think there is a feeling of optimism, I think, in your essay that I share as a historian, and maybe it's foolish optimism because we can certainly point to an awful lot of bad things as well. But I think back to 10 years ago, being a resident of the West Village after 9/11, and people thinking this is the end of the downtown. And 10 years later, we're walking the High Line in the midst of this extraordinary renaissance of this neighborhood. So I think that there is, something to be optimistic about, even in the darkest moments.
Ken Davis is going to stay with us as we look back on 2011 and look ahead to 2012.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.